Okay, fine. Guys. Okay, so let's continue. So, so we've talked about that it's not just enough to say post facto. Look, you know, we were you know, co-owners, and you know, I'll work on Sunday, you work on Shabbat. So that doesn't work. But the assumption of everything we've talked about until now is that who owns the business? They both do. That was what we've been talking about. So to what extent is that necessary, right? That the non-Jew actually be an owner? So let's start. It's page bottom, page 9. So the Tosefta has a similar case or parallel case to our Gemara. Yisrael v'goy shalakhu merchatz eno shay shayom lo tei shabbat b'chelkocha v'chol b'chelki v'mitnaimo b'minatkein mutar. Right, so if a Jew and a non-Jew bought a shower, you know, bathhouse together, they can't say, look, Shabbos yours, weekday mine, unless you make that condition up front. Right, that's what we saw in the Gemara. Yes? Okay. So, in this case, so here's where they are both co-owners. Now, in our Gemara, we were talking about sharecroppers, right? Where both of them have rights in the field, and neither of them is per se the owner, right? So now Tosfos deals with the following case. If you look at Tosfos, Ma'isa kachaya b'mei Rabbeinu Tam, shegava Yisrael echad b'chavo tanur echad me'ovei kochavim, v'haya lo lofem masika tanur chelko b'tanur, v'haya lo liyudi litol kach v'kach yamin b'chelko ulofe kemo kein kach v'kach. So you had a case where a Jew took as collateral, so ended up collecting as collateral, an oven from a non-Jew. And the non-Jew maintained rights in the oven for a certain number of days, and the Jew maintained rights in the oven for a certain number of days. Okay? Yes?
And the rights in the oven is like...
Yes. Like...
When to use it?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
I was making sure when the way it's using phrasing it is just
rights in the oven, right? He didn't own it; he had rights to use it. V'nira le'arav Rabbeinu Elchanan de'betanur afilu esnu mitchila lo yo'il kevan shekol tanur shel Yisrael hu. Now he said, in this case, right, the Jew owned it fully, and the non-Jew was using it, owned it not at all. He just had rights to use it.
Well, he's not using it, he had rights to use it. What is he doing?
What do you mean? I can make a deal with someone that they have rights to use my property a few days a week. I can do that.
But he can use it.
But he's not an owner.
Okay.
I mean, the Jew owned it. So the question that he had was, is that mutter? I mean, until now we've been talking about where the Jews and the non-Jew both have rights. Both own or both don't own, right? And both have rights. But what happens if the Jew owns and the non-Jew only has rights of usage? Right?
How often it seems weird because...
I mean, you have three possibilities, right? You could have Jew and non-Jew both own. You could have Jew and non-Jew, neither of them own. They both sort of have rights, right? But then you could have Jew own, non-Jew has rights. So is that mutter?
Well, isn't it weird having a non-Jew use your oven? Can't you not, like, their food is different?
I'm sorry, what?
Well, if they're using an oven, they're baking food. Isn't he baking his non-kosher food?
Maybe he's baking bread, which is what you usually do in an oven.
That's usually what restaurants do. They have the non-Jewish cook.
The Jew turns on the oven and the non-Jew can use it after.
Or the non-Jew just bakes his bread in it. What's the problem?
I didn't think. I was thinking about that because, like, the oven thing is like in Morocco. The whole community shared an oven.
Correct.
So
that, yes, we're talking about a world where not everyone has private ovens. This is a big deal to have rights in an oven.
Yeah.
But what's the problem? Yeah, we're talking about a case where the non-Jew is using it to bake whatever he's baking.
So I was curious. There's no problem when it comes to using an oven. Really? What if it's not bread and it's lasagna?
So what's the case? We can get into the complicated kosher shilas if you want, but not at the moment. I won't do
it's
it. But
personal thing, just because I know what that's for my community. That's for my heritage day in the day.
Yeah, I'm so confused. What?
In Morocco, both my grandparents are from Morocco.
Yeah, it was standard that there was a communal oven, that not everyone had private ovens. That was not unheard of. But I'm missing the. What's your question?
Is there a problem with a non-Jew baking in an oven?
Why?
Not with some that, the same one that Jew bakes in.
Are we talking about kosher or not kosher food?
Yeah,
you're talking about bread.
I mean, the non-Jew doesn't always do just it's bread. Maybe the non-Jew does non-kosher food.
Okay, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. And if he does, maybe it's covered. Maybe it's a big enough oven that it doesn't matter.
Okay, maybe.
Right, at least it would be the oven that doesn't matter.
So I was curious. He only talked about when he did it with challah, that non-Jew.
So a lot of them are like that. You could have it, let's just assume it's bread and make it easier, because the kosher challahs would get complicated. But do you have two ovens at home?
A little pizza oven and then a big oven.
Do you use your oven both meat and milk?
No, the pizza oven's for the dairy.
Okay, so you're very from. But you know, in America I never had two ovens. Right?
Yeah, it's a luxury to have two.
And you ask me, halachically, totally and completely unnecessary, right? The only reason I have two ovens now is because it's Israeli ovens and they're small, right? But a big, nice American oven, only one.
Right, we still have only one big oven.
What?
You just can't cook things at the same time.
L'chatrila, yeah. But zachar zeh, Reshechter paskins that as long as it's cooled down. Right?
Oh, as long as it's cooled down.
Like, you cook meat,
cool it down.
Turn it off, open the oven. As soon as it cools down, cook dairy.
Seriously?
Yes, seriously. And he's obviously correct. Obviously correct. Like, I don't even. Like, obviously correct. Yes, there are other post-game who are mocking here, but. I think within the YU community at this point, that is what most people do, because Reshechter has said it.
Most of Surfside is actually very wealthy that they have two real ovens.
But usually people have fleishiks for
shoppers. I'm not saying I'm one of them, but a little pizza oven.
Uh-huh.
I have a big oven for meat.
This is a language I don't speak.
What do you mean tiny?
Okay.
This is how big our milk
oven
is.
Okay, guys, let's move on. The point is that there are many times in which this would be fine, and let's just assume he's talking bread. Fine, bread is easy. Okay, bread is easy, right? Bread is not even a, you know. Fine, bread's easy. For so many reasons, bread is easy. It's kosher, if you want to deal with the. It's fine, okay? We're good. Unbelievable.
Not kosher eggs.
What? You can have non kosher eggs.
Well, there are non kosher eggs.
Yes, of course.
Turkey vulture egg?
Or an egg. I don't understand.
I was going.
Okay, I'm just continuing. This was not the point. So Rabbeinu Elchanan says it doesn't help at all. In this case, if the Jew owns the oven and gives the non Jews rights in the oven to bake, right? He cannot allow the non-Jew to bake on Shabbos. Period. End of story. So, v'havei leikim maskir tanuro b'Shabbat. V'amar leikim tol schar tanuri b'Shabbat kishet esnei leinu b'chol. Because, right, this is not what you're letting him use as a favor for himself. This is where, like, you owe him rights, right? Like, you owe him X amount of days in the oven, and you give one of those days at Shabbos. Because then you're paying him off the rights you owe him with Shabbos. You can't do that.
What if it's just that he's allowed to cook at a certain time in the day?
So no, because then you're giving him rights on Shabbos. You can't do that.
Meaning,
no, you can't.
But it's not.
No, that's his point. You can't do that because you're saying you have rights. I have to give you X amount of rights in this oven, right? You don't own it. I own it.
Yeah.
But I've made a deal with you that you're going to pay or whatever. I have monetary obligations to you, which I'm going to fulfill by giving you rights in my oven. That can't happen on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Elchanan.
Even if you're restricted to just use it after 10 o'clock, you're allowed to use the oven.
Yes, because you have a monetary obligation that you have to this person, and you are fulfilling it on Shabbos, so you are renting out your oven on Shabbos. You can't do that.
Okay.
That's his point. He said the difference between ours is what? Is it the non-Jew owns
part of it?
That's why, right? So Rabbi Yochanan says that everything in our sugya only works because, by the way, if you didn't notice, this was those long tosefim that I told you to do. These are just the key parts pulled out, right? But now they should make more sense, right? Rabbi Yochanan says all the heterim in our Gemara only work if the non-Jew owns it. Why? Because then the Jew's not renting out anything out on Shabbos. What's happening?
It's only for his benefit. The non-Jew's not owing anything.
The non-Jew owns it, and the question is, how do we make it that what he does on Shabbos is for himself and not for me? But that only works if he owns it. If he doesn't own it, then obviously you can't say the non-Jew is using his property. He's not using my property, and that's a problem. Right?
Well, isn't it like when you ask him to wash your dishes when he's done before?
No. You are telling him to do a malacha. Right? You're allowing him to do a malacha. You're allowing him, right? You owe him the rights to it. You're allowing him to use a malacha, to do a malacha, which has a monetary equivalent in your property on Shabbos. And Rabbi Nachman said, that is usher.
Wait, you said, we did a case where you said you...
You owe him rights. You are paying off those rights by letting him use it on Shabbos. That, according to Rabbi Elchanan, is usur. Period.
Okay, so it's...
This is not like any of the cases we talked about. I know what you're about to say. No, that is a case where I'm asking him to do my dishes, right? And do malacha. Here I am paying off my debt to him on Shabbos. Right? That's the problem. Okay? That doesn't work. Okay. Next point. This is something we mentioned before. What happens if you messed up? Right? You messed up and you did not make the deals you were supposed to do at the beginning. And remember, you can't make them later. So what do you do?
You sell the business.
Good. That's Rabbeinu Tam's position in that Tosfos that I gave you a while ago. Remember? Rabbeinu Tam, Siva, continuing on the page. Rabbeinu Tam, Siva, Lekabel, Chomin, Avikohim, Lachzor, Lavot, Latno, Mithila. You got to start it over again. Sell it up. Sell it. Take it back with a...
I mean, you just tell a guy, I want to buy our business for a dollar. Then
yeah, you mean you have to formally start this relationship again. Okay. Now, all of the cases we've been talking about now, the central profit comes at the end in one big, right, in sort of periodically, right? We've been talking about agriculture primarily, right? What happens if money is made every single day? Right, we sort of hinted at this, but how do you actually deal with that type of case? Right?
Like
what?
Website.
Like any of those, yeah. So the Rosh writes, "My sahaya b'Yisrael shigava chatzit tanur bechovo me'ovei kochavim echad." Right, a Jew, a Jew collected as his loan, right, as payment for his loan, half the rights in an oven, okay, or half an oven. So hitnu mitchila tolat abeshabat vani bechol, and they failed to make the proper deal, right, namely. Right, because now we both own it 50% rather than I own something. Monday, Tuesday, you own, yeah. So the Ri wanted to say, no problem. Because the Ri said the only reason that it was problematic to begin with was because when we were dealing with the field, what was the problem? That the work that the non-Jew does, what, actually benefits the Jew. But if the question is, okay, you know, how much money did you make off baking in the oven? So you could just say, look, the Jew takes weekdays and the non-Jew takes Shabbos, and it's not a problem that you didn't make the deal, Meikara. Why?
It's not a problem.
Pay attention. Stop spazzing. Stop.
It's not a problem that you're selling it.
The Rush quotes the position of the Re, that the only time when we insist that you make a deal at the beginning is when the nature of the business is that the money is made over long periods of time. Because then, if we don't make a deal at the beginning, then the Jew is benefiting from the non-Jew does on Shabbos. But let's say there's a very easy way to do this, which is, look, we didn't make a deal at the beginning, but it's a daily profit thing. Right?
So you just take the profit.
Yeah, so the Re says, that's not our problem. Like, we co-own an oven. Right? We didn't say at the beginning who owns what days. But what the Jew does doesn't affect what the non-Jew does in his days, and vice versa. So there, even if I didn't make a deal at the beginning, if I just said to the non-Jew, look, we both own this oven together. You take it on Shabbos and I take it on Sunday, then...
Isn't that the case? It's fine because it's needed.
What?
Isn't that the case we're dealing?
No, but you didn't do it at the beginning.
Right, that's...
Isn't, that's no, correct. Correct, but the Re says that when it comes to a field, that's the problems we talked about yesterday. But when it comes to an oven, you can even make that deal later on. Because the only reason that you had to make the deal at the beginning was because what the non-Jew does on the field affects the Jew. And that's why... But
the non-Jew does with the oven.
Doesn't affect the Jew.
He's cooking for his clients here.
Yeah! So he says in such a case, you don't need to make the deal at the beginning. You just need to make sure that the Jew is getting the weekday and the non-Jew is making Shabbos. But even if you don't make the deal at the beginning, why? Well, what's his argument?
You're not working on Shabbos.
And what's his argument? His argument is that because the nature of this product is that one day doesn't affect the next, so... But the only reason by the field I have to make the deal at the beginning is because the way money is made is over long periods of time.
So if I
didn't make the deal originally, then the non-Jew would be working for the Jew, and that's why we have to jump through all these hoops to make sure.
But
he says, what's the case, right? We co-own an oven, right?
Okay, no.
You and I are a baker, right? So we've got... Right? And we do the way we get paid is whatever we bake in a day and sell, we keep. Right? So the Re says in that case, we don't have to make a deal at the beginning and say the Jew gets Sunday and the non-Jew gets Shabbos. It's just the nature of the reality. The non-Jew goes in Saturday morning, bakes his stuff, sells to his non-Jews, closes up shop, Sunday morning the Jew comes in. Right? So the Re says in that case,
like enough, it happens.
Correct, is it right? Whenever the nature of the profit, so that you can like divide it such that the Jew and the non-Jew just don't affect each other, so then he says, so then the Jew should not take Shabbos, the non-Jew will take Shabbos. You don't have to make the deal, Meikara. You don't have to make the deal at the beginning.
You mean long-term contract?
I mean, right, his argument is you don't have to make the long-term contract if the way the money is made is daily.
Ah,
okay. Right, he's saying you have to set up the proper long-term contract if money is made over a long term in such a way that it requires investment. Right? But assuming we have a functioning bakery, right, at this point, right, you know, like, you know, let's take an old school one, because you can get into all the complexities, right? Let's leave, right, a modern one, you'd have to start saying, well, what about the electricity bills that we're going to, right? In their times, an oven that had to be fueled every day by wood, right? So the non-Jew literally brings in his wood every day, right, burns out the, right, you know, sets up the fire, brings his own flour, bakes his goods, sells his goods, end of day, closes shop, Sunday morning the Jew does the same. The Re says, I don't need to make a long-term deal because the whole thing is a series of short-term enterprises. Okay? That's the Re. Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like it. And he says, V'lo hodul Rabbeinu Tam, v'amar dein chiluk bein tanur l'sadeh. Rabbeinu Tam said it's untrue. He said it's just not true. It's not true. Right? The Re looks at it and says, who made the money today? Rabbeinu Tam says, that's not how you look at it. You look at it as...
Whose oven is working?
And the fact is, in the end of the day, if we co-own a bakery, and the Jew works on Shabbos, and the non-Jew, the Jew works on Sunday, and the non-Jew works on Shabbos, you didn't set up a deal. It's still the Jew's business functioning on Shabbos.
Why?
Because it is. We co-own it. Right? Meaning,
but it's still a short term.
But that's the point. The Re looks at, I think if you put it, the Re looks at the nature of the payment, the profits. Rabbeinu Tam looks at the nature of the business.
You mean the partnership?
Yeah, he looks at the nature of the business. And at the end of the day, you're right. the money is made in compartmentalized periods, right? Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whatever. But at the end of the day, like
if you want Danny's donuts, it's open.
To give you a very Balabatish Svara for Rabbeinu Tam, mm-hmm. right? Rabbeinu, like, think about it. Guys, think about Rabbeinu Tam, right? Bring it to a modern period, right? You could say, the reason argument is, look, basically, you bake on Shabbos, the guy bakes on Shabbos, so that's his profit. The Jew bakes on Sunday, that's his profit. But Rabbeinu Tam, I think, is saying, wait a second, it's not really how this is looking. Meaning, sure, the non-Jew makes all the money on Shabbos, and the Jew works on... But that doesn't mean they're totally... that they're not in partnership such that the non-Jew isn't working for the Jew on Shabbos. Because what would happen, right, realistically... Let's say a Jew and a non-Jew co in a bakery, yeah. and the oven breaks on Sunday. Is the non-Jew going to say, "Oh, it broke on your time. You have to fix it from your own money."
No.
And if it breaks on Shabbos, is the Jew going to be able to say to the non-Jew, "Oh, it broke on Shabbos, right? Yours." And realistically, think about it. Modern times, right? They have it's running on gas or running on electricity, right? Even if they did this, do you think at the end of the month they're going to start cheshbonning out? Oh.
Bill for
right, let's figure out the gas bill by day. No, we'll split the gas bill 50-50, meaning tachlis. Even if the Jew is taking all the profits for Sunday, the non-Jew is taking all for Shabbos, Rabbeinu Tam says, Sach HaKol, you're still in partnership, right? Fine. And that, and his proof is that the Tosefta brings a case of a ger who inherits a bathhouse with his non-Jewish brother. Right? So, what?
It's not a Jewish brother, he's rent. Two brothers are doing it together.
A ger, a convert.
Yeah.
One's a convert, one's not.
Yes, that's what. That's how you could inherit with a non-Jew together. Mm-hmm. The Tosefta says that all these... 1 second. The Tosefta says that all the halacha we've been learning apply even when a Jew and his non-Jewish brother, because he's a convert, the Jew converted, and therefore his brother is still not Jewish, inherit from their non-Jewish father a bathhouse, right? And they want to split the profits for the bathhouse, right? They charge people to come to the bathhouse. And Rabbeinu Tam says, the bathhouse is like which case?
Same thing with the partnership.
It's like the oven, right? It's not like a field, it's a daily profit. And yet the Tosefta says, you have to make, you have to make the long-term deals. Haraya, right? The Ria is wrong.
So I have a question.
Just look at the summary, right? End of that Tosos. Kitro shel davar, summary. Bein kerem, bein sadeh, bein merchatz, o tanur. Right? I don't care what it is. Vineyard, field, oven, shower, who cares? Im lachu yisrav v'oveid kochavim mishutafut, asur lomar tolata chelkecha, elem ken hitnu mitchila, kodem shalachu, she'ein liyisrael b'shabbat shum chelek. I don't care what the deal is, Rabbeinu Tam Paskins, you have to make that long-term deal at the beginning that divides it up. Yes.
No, my question is, normally, do we say like a convert? I mean, maybe it has something to do with it. When he converts to the Judaism, he normally he has no brother or sister.
Correct.
He has a new family, so how could you consider him as a brother?
Right, so this is Midir Abanan, right? Because we're afraid that if, let's say, right, we're afraid that maybe biblically he shouldn't inherit from his father anymore because he's not related to his father. But what's going to happen? The guy is so sincere, he's a good convert, and then what happens? His father passes away, and his father was worth, $150 million, right? And we say to him, oh, because you converted, you get none of the money. He goes all to your brother. Right, bad idea. So we say
practically, I mean.
So we right. So we yes.
No, but we'll give like
yes. In terms of status issues, he's not related. But for Yerusha, because
yeah,
yes. Sure, Ivanka Trump as an example. Sure.
Just in case people didn't understand.
Yes, she. I mean, biblically, she wouldn't inherit anyways, because.
Uh-huh. Same thing here.
She's a daughter.
Right.
She's, right.
She's a daughter. I understand. Right.
And there are sons. Right? Donald.
Donald Jr.
Doesn't matter, older or younger. There are boys.
Say legally.
Legally, not.
We're talking halachically or legally?
No, I understand. No.
What are we talking about here?
Halachically, she wants.
He's talking about halachically.
Right.
Okay, I'm not saying, by the way. Biblically, only sons inherit unless there are only daughters.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Now,
even then, it's until once they're married, it goes to the son-in-law, doesn't it?
What?
That's the case with the, when the, who was it, for Reuven, he only had daughters.
While a woman is married, her property that comes in after she's married goes to her husband.
Right.
She does if she gets, but money she brings into the marriage doesn't stay with the husband.
Uh-huh.
If she divorces, yeah. So no. Not necessarily. Anyways, fine. Now, parenthetically, we do have mechanisms by which we do allow daughters to inherit. Right? It started with a shtar several hundred years ago, which is called a shtar chatzi zachar, right? Which meant that we wrote a document. The simplest version of it is that the father writes a document that says, in his lifetime, from now I create an obligation of my entire property to my daughter, payable upon my death, and the. The halacha is that any debt that you incur, the heirs have to
pay it.
So what you do is you say,
even in Amman times, like that also.
Correct. But the point here is halacha.
Yeah.
So Shtar Chatzi Zachar says that if my sons pay my daughter the equivalent of half of a son, right? Then she will agree to forgive the loan that I have, fake loan that I have created towards her, right? Right? Now, eventually that became what's called now a shtar kulo zachar, right? Which is a father writes, I obligate myself to my daughter to pay her $10 million, and my sons will therefore be liable to pay her $10 million unless they give her an equal portion in the inheritance as they have. Right? That's a shtar kulo zachar. Okay?
Why make it so complicated?
Because she can't inherit. That's why she can't inherit. Right? Because biblically, the sons inherit, the daughter doesn't. So in order to make it
possible.
Because you understand, you don't have the option of just saying, oh, let me just give my daughter to inherit. You can't do that. You can't do that directly.
Well, I have a question. Is it also true?
What? Halacha will not allow it.
Yeah.
According to Mo's post-gim, a secular will do nothing. Now, it's certainly one of the weirdest things, because Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Soloveitchik both thought that there was validity to a secular will. And yet, the majority of post-gim still are highly opposed to relying on secular wills. So they endorse all types of mechanisms, like the shtar kulo zachar and things like that. If you want, as I say often, I don't know how often I say this. We got a Wayuta Ra. I have a shir on the topic. Yes, and it was a shir I gave to mostly non-Jews, so you require almost no background in the topic.
You give a shir on it
and Wayuta.
On Wayuta Ra, I gave a shir at a. Like a portfolio management company, right, which specializes in inheritance. And they'd asked for a shear on the topic because they deal with a lot of Orthodox clients, even though very few people who work there are Orthodox. They deal with Orthodox clients and therefore wanted to be aware of the issues that their clients were dealing with. So I was dealing with people who have no halachic background, meaning they are not Jewish, right? But I was explaining the basics, at least, of inheritance law and halacha and how it manifests itself practically. So if you're interested, it's there.
But is it also true, like normally we say, the Bechor, yeah, who inherits always gets the double of the amount?
Yes, that's a pasuk in the Torah. Yes, it's a pasuk.
Not a Bechor, anyways.
No.
Yes, it's a pasuk. The firstborn.
Firstborn,
who is a male, gets double.
But I have an older brother, but I have an adopted older sister who's older.
Which has no relevance halachically.
Women don't get the thing anyway.
Where he would halachically be. Actually, no, he was born in Caesar.
That's what I was going to say. That's what he has to be born naturally.
That's why I'm confused. Is he still the Bechor?
No, the standards of Bechor are not the same for Pidgin Haben.
Oh.
Because by Pidgin Haben, the standard is Peter Rechem.
Right?
Okay. Let me give you the biggest difference between the two of them. By Pidgin Haben, it's the firstborn of the mother. Peter Rechem.
Oh.
By inheritance, it's the firstborn of the father. Those are big differences.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense. You can have multiple people on a bench because you feel multiple wives.
There you go. Okay. Halacha. Now let's bring halacha. A nice summary at the end here. And then you get this nice summary. Summary, okay. Yisrael ve'ena Yehudi she'yish lem sadeh tanur merchatz reichayim shomayim b'shutafut, which means we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. Right? There is no difference. So a Jew and a non-Jew that have co-ownership of a field, any piece of property, oshem shutvin bechanut b'schora, or in a store, imitnu mitchila b'sha'a shaboli shatev shiyeschar shabbat leino yudi levado imat v'marbe. If you made the deal at the beginning that Shabbos goes to the non-Jew, v'sachar yom echad keneged yom, Shabbat Shalavado, and then you trade days, right? I get everything from Sunday, you get everything from Shabbos. Mutar! Vim lo hitnu bitchila, if you don't make the condition at the beginning, Shavu lachlok, notel in yudus char Shabbatot kulam. If you didn't make the condition, then the non-Jew takes everything made on Shabbos. Vashar cholkimoto, and you divide the rest, like Rashi, like the Rambam is understood by the Magen Mishnah. Vimlo ayas char Shabbat yadua. This is explicitly in the Rambam. If you don't know how much you made on Shabbat, so what do you do?
Listen to what we say.
4/7, 3/7 split. Mm-hmm. Right? You just assume it's a seventh and give 4/7 to the goy, 3/7 to the Jew. Right? You're telling you do vado shvira schar v'chol ke mashar.
If you know that it's usually like, let's say it's not exactly, like, you know it's not one, it's seventh, but you don't know if it's one and two sevenths. Like, what?
You gotta figure it out. The Rama paskins like the Rush, however, that what? Right, remember, Bistam. Right? What am I to do with Bistam? Right? So then, what's the halacha? Remember, the way Rashi understood the Gemara was that it's clearly usher to take money if you explicitly said, you take Shabbos, I'll take Sunday, later on. If you said it at the beginning, then it's totally mutter. What happens if you said nothing?
Then it's mutter.
So then the Rush says it's mutter. Because, right, it's a suffix in the Gemara. It's a bayadol. The Rambam says it is usher, and you give 4/7 to the goy, and
3/7 for yourself,
and 3/7 for you, and the Rush says it's derabanan and we're mekel, and therefore you both take 50%, which is a difference of how much money?
$1,000.
What percentage?
In terms of the 4/7, 3/7. Who's making a difference?
Credit for 100, you do it back. Can you trade?
A seventh is a little bit more than 14%. So the difference is
about 36%.
Is how much?
36. Oh, 50 to 14 to 50 for 70.
I don't get it. You have the pie. You know the whole story about the
50% pie. 50%
and 14
versus
1/7.
3/7, okay. Which is 42% and change.
Oh, right.
The difference of about 7.5% or so.
I did 1/7. My bad.
I do better on paper when it comes to math.
I just say it, by the way, too.
So what other topics do we not know?
I didn't say it, dude.
Gemara, Tanakh, English, math, history.
Grammar. Don't
Torah, listen. The Torah has a lot of things.
I know.
What?
I know all 24 books. I thought you asked me what 1/7
the difference between giving someone 50% and giving him
3/7. Okay.
Or, if you want to make it very, should I do this easily? Look, it's the difference between giving someone 6/14 and 7/14. Means a difference of 1/14.
That's 1/14.
Okay?
Johnny, I get it. You didn't say
basic
anything, okay?
Mathematics. I did this in fourth grade, but this is yes in JFS.
That's the whole point. Okay. How you do it is by the pie idea.
You didn't say anything, okay?
I don't see you.
Okay? The difference of 1/14.
So why is it correct?
Why are you laughing, Danny? You didn't know this either.
I just want to.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad I am practicing my fourth grade math.
I need to knock and wake up.
I loved fractions. I loved fractions.
They were the worst.
I love proportions.
You know what I loved, Remy? Equations.
You know what I loved?
Everything is.
I loved fractions.
I love geometry.
I like geometry too. You're like. You're like, yeah, I think we're talking different geometry. There's geometry of, is this a square or a circle? And then there's, you know,
diagram theory.
Figure out the angle of, you know,
oh, that was fun.
Sines and cosines and all that stuff.
Cosines.
That's Sokotoa. Did you learn that?
That was pre-Cali.
Yes.
Everybody knows
that. Okay, good. So, Lehalacha, guys. So, Bidi Eved. So, Bidi Eved. If you didn't make the deal, so according to the Rambam, what would you have to do?
According to the Rambam, you would have to sell it.
You have to give him 4.
Oh, yeah.
So, give him 4/7.
Right.
According, right? Assuming you don't know how much money it is, let's say. According to the Rush, Bidi Avad.
50-50.
A half, which again is a difference of?
1/7.
1/14. About 7%, correct. Okay.
Which is not terrible.
And the Ramah says, so he says, if there's a big hefsid, meaning what? So let's just put numbers here. Let's say you made
$100.
So it's a difference of about $7.
It's not terrible.
Fine, let's say you made $1,000,000.
Different of $7,000. 7% of a 1,000,000? Oh, 70, sorry.
Uh-huh.
70,000.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? It's a lot of money. Okay?
I said something and stayed quiet, and then, like, you do it.
No, I thought you were going to.
I said something. Had a different number.
Okay, let's just do this. It's a difference of 1/14. So, here, I'll make it easier. If you made $14, it's a difference of
$1.
Yeah. If you made $14 million, it's a difference of $1,000,000. $1,000,000.
Which is a lot of money.
Which is a lot of money. So the Ramah says, if it's $1, then sure, be naked. Right? Sorry,
what
be
about euros?
What?
What about euros or francs?
It's even more.
No,
and now on the other hand, if it's a million like Turkish lira, then I don't know. Okay. Fine.
Donnie will answer those ones.
Fine. Now, Yesh Omrim, Chikolzu Lomairi, El Bashutafu, Chikolachado, Seik Biomo. Now, remember we said, however, remember the Ran? The Ramah then brings the Yesh Omrim of the Ran. Remember the Ran? What was the Ran?
Good question.
Remember the Ran that you found shocking yesterday? That the Ran says, the Yesh Omrim, Chikolzu Lomairi, El Bashutafu, Chikolachado, Seik Biomo. Right, some say that this is only problematic if normally you split the days. But if 6 days a week they work together, and on Shabbos only the non-Jew works, so then you can take 50-50. Right, remember that counterintuitive, Ron? Right, that the only problem is when we split days. But if we don't split days, we just always are both working. So then if the non-Jew comes in on Shabbos, he's really just working for himself because we haven't divvied up the days.
How would you work then on Shabbat?
You're not working.
You don't, but you're splitting the profit at the end. Okay. Right, so the Ron, like, remember the Ron yesterday, like, the one that you were sleeping through? That one?
Correct, exactly.
And he says, you're not really benefiting, because you know what? The non-Jew has no tainas on you, they didn't shove on Shabbos, and therefore, he'd work for himself, so... He just knows that obviously, right, there's a second problem which we haven't talked about, which is called Schar Shabbat, which means you can't actually be paid for something on Shabbos. But the way to solve Schar Shabbos is easy. It's what's called Havla. What's Havla? I don't get paid by day, but I get paid by week. Right? Meaning I get paid altogether. So that's fine. He said, you still can't be paid just for Shabbos, but you can divide it up by week.
Profit by week.
Correct. That's fine.
So why can't we do that by the year also?
Or by year.
Profit for the year.
You could, or by year, or whatever you want.
That's what I'm saying. Is a problem because you're...
No, remember, this was the Ran. This is the saying the Yeshua from the Ran.
Okay.
Saying within the Ran that it's, right, that it's less problematic when you both work all the time. You still can't get paid for Shabbos per se.
Split it for the week.
Just, exactly. Okay.
So
now.
Say that they both work every day, except that, and then just the Jew won't work on Shabbat, and that's okay.
According to the Ran. According to Rashi, it's not okay, but according to the Ran, that's okay. Correct. Sif Beis. Hei ha shehitnu batchila. If you did make the condition at the beginning, if the guy decides at the end he wants to split it 50-50 and not bother taking the extra money, So it's mutter.
Because he was working for himself.
Who's that like?
That was the...
Rashi against who?
The Rambam. No, the Rush.
The Ravid. Remember, the Ravid says that you can't later on decide to split it 50-50 because then it shows it was a harama, it was a lie, right? That it was a legal fiction. Remember that? But the Shulchan Aruch Paskins like Rashi that no, if he wants to give you a gift, it's fine. It's not called a harama. Now, Sif Gimel, guys, thank you, Sif Gimel. If you didn't make the deal at the beginning, yesh tikun, how do you fix it? You got to sell it to a third party and buy it back together. Yes, you have to undo the whole deal legally.
You should probably sell it on the condition that you'll buy it back. You have to sell it on the condition that you'll buy it. You have to sell it back.
And then you have to buy it back with the right condition. Exactly.
Okay, I just got a $2 million.
Good. Now, if all this was confusing, so they are very nice to you and they give you a summary so far. Look at that. So, let's read through it because I think this summary actually will help us bring, because there's a lot of information. Good. The Gemara states that if a non-Jew and a Jew become business partners, the Jew should define at the out. This is page 11. The Gemara states that if a non-Jew and a Jew become business partners, the Jew should define at the outset that the work of Shabbat is not his responsibility. If he does not do this, he is not allowed to work for equivalent hours on a different day and receive those profits, since the non-Jew is considered to be working on Shabbat on the Jew's behalf. The Tosefta says the same is true regarding joint ownership of a business. The Re suggests that a business that earns profit daily, where each day's profit has no bearing on that of the next day, will be more lenient, but Rabbeinu Tam rejects his opinion. Shulchan Aruch therefore emphasizes these halachot apply equally to all kinds of partnership. The Gemara questions whether in a situation where they did not make such a stipulation, they may later divide the profits equally, and the Gemara does not reach a conclusion. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam, while the Rama writes that there are those who permit splitting the profits equally in retrospect based on the Rush's opinion, and the Rama adds that this may be relied upon if being stringent would involve a significant loss. The Ran adds an additional leniency. If the two partners work together every day and the non-Jew chooses to work on Shabbat, and he does so for its own benefit in order to earn money that day and not on the Jew's behalf. If he then wants to share the profits with a Jewish partner, there is no problem to do so and it is permitted. The Rama quotes his opinion as that there are those that say at the end of the first sif. We saw that the Brisa writes in Bala Cheshman Aser, Rashi and the Ravid disagree regarding whether the Gemara is to discuss it in case where they made a stipulation initially or not. There are also different ways of understanding the Rambam's opinion in such a case. Shulchan Aruch writes that as long as they made an initial stipulation, it makes no difference how they divide the money in the end, and it is always permitted. The Bach and the Mogen Avraham, however, are stringent due to the Ravid's opinion. Right, this I didn't give you the sources. So there are those who are machmer like the Ravid, and the Elia Rabbah is undecided. The Mishnah Berurah rules that one needs to be concerned with the Ravid's opinion only if they calculate how much was made on Shabbat in order to ensure that Jew earned an equivalent amount from his work during the week. But they simply split the profits equally without any such calculation. The Shabbat is lenient, because then what? It's a combination of, potentially, of the Ran, right? And all types of other shit that you can get into. Fine. Now, a few more details. So Maral Bach has a case. What happens if you did make a stipulation, but then you can't figure out how much you made? Right, meaning you made a deal at the beginning and says everything made on Shabbos will go to the Goy and everything made. But by the end, you just don't know, right? You thought you'd be able to keep records and you didn't. You lost the records.
And you do the 4/7. That's what I'm
saying. So that was. Right, so the Maral Bach says, "In lachol shem raviach agoy b'shabbat yoter v'yikra Yisrael no tel schar Shabbat." So the Rambam is machmir and says you need to, right, divide it 4/7, 3/7. No, sorry, no. The Rambam says you divide 4/7, 3/7. You didn't make a deal. You made a deal, and now you just can't figure out how much did I make on Shabbos. So you could have, but the Magen Avraham and the Ramal Bach say, no, you actually are allowed to split 50-50 at that point.
It's kind of like the Ravid who says that if you change the...
Correct, but the Magen Avraham and the Maral Bach here are saying that you're allowed to split 50-50 at this point. Because you made... It's like Rashi, right?
You're the deal wasn't real then because you don't
know what... But remember, Rashi said you're allowed to do that. Remember? Remember.
Oh, they could, right.
Right, and that, so they, right, so therefore,
the
correct.
Would say still 4-7.
Good. Okay. And then we said, right, that if you didn't make such a stipulation, you have to disband the partnership and then regroup with the proper ones. Okay.
Or he'll fire you and then rehire you because
him. Okay, do you want to look through these shilas that they have here quickly just to see how this plays out in some sort of modern ones?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So well, quickly. Okay, the question, first question they have here is, I'll say it outside, a Jew and a non-Jew have a partnership in a business, a building business. Each of them has 45%, and then there's a 10% outside ownership. Okay? Two main partners, 45%, and then, yeah, or other workers or whatever, right? Meaning two main owners own 45%, and then a bunch of other people own 10 total. Okay? So the Shiloh was as follows. Officially, the office is closed on Shabbos, but many of the workers and the non-Jewish partner show up on Shabbos. Okay? Yes?
Yeah.
To finish up, they come into on Shabbos to finish up work from the week.
So that's
but, one second. But the Jew at the beginning did make a deal with the non-Jew that all profit made on Shabbos goes to the non-Jew. Right? So, two questions. Did they even need such a deal, considering the fact that they don't work on Shabbos officially, and therefore all profits that are made on Shabbos are only indirect? Right? Meaning, like, Shabbos is when people do paperwork. They don't actually make deals. So there's no direct money that comes from Shabbos. So was there even... Correct. Was there any need for this at all? Right? And two is, if there was a need, was it okay that they did it bal peh? Right? That they did it bal peh and they didn't write it into a shtar. So, what do you think?
Sounds fine, because they made the deal before.
So, two questions. One is, do you even need a deal?
Because then you're getting profit.
So they argue no.
Oh, because there's no money being made on Shabbos.
Correct. Right? They say in this case there's no money being made on Shabbos. The fact that the non-Jew wants to show up and, you know,
that's on his
to make up for paperwork. But no money is made on Shabbos. He's just...
Right. He's just finalizing.
So they think in such a case, whether you're closed on Shabbos...
It's kind of like making the money on Shabbos. The money
no.
Was, yeah, but the money wasn't yours before Shabbos. Here you're finalizing the deal on
no,
Shabbos.
No, not finalizing the deal. He comes in to do paperwork. Not to finalize the deal. No money is made on Shabbos.
Yeah,
but people come in to do paperwork.
Right.
To finish up that
right? Work. Finish up work.
Yes.
Right? So he says, in a case...
He said there was... They closed the deal on Shabbos.
No. The business is closed on Shabbos.
Right.
But some people show up to work anyways to finish up paperwork.
Right.
So they argue in such a case, you don't need to make a deal because the business is closed on Shabbos.
Nobody being pulled in on Shabbos.
Correct. Mm-hmm. The fact that the non-Jew wants to show up on Shabbos because, you know, he doesn't want to have a pile of work on Sunday morning. He'd rather do it on Shabbos and enjoy Sunday with his family. It's fine. And there's no problem making money because
there's no money
being made. It's part of the business, but it's not. So they argue in such a case you don't even need to make a deal. That's for the partner.
But in a case where the non-Jew...
Now he says, one second, so he says the other workers, he said it theoretically could have been a problem, but again, it's not a problem in this case because they don't make money on Shabbos.
Right?
But if they did, right? Now he says, in a case when you would need a deal, though in this case you don't, he said technically a verbal deal is fine, even though a monetary... in monetary deals, you should always have it in writing. Right? That's just a good idea. Technically, they think it's not necessary, but it is. But it's probably a good idea. Okay, that's one. Shiloh two. A Jew owns a falafel store, falafel restaurant. Okay, it's kosher. It's just hummus, falafel, vegetarian, etc. The pitot. Kosher from a place only bakes pita, right? The problem is Shabbos. Okay? So this store owner said, look, I The way the business here works is that I would make more money on Shabbos than I do in the rest of the week combined. Okay? I would make, you know, $1,000 between Sunday to Friday and $3,000 on Shabbos. Right? Right? So he said, am I allowed to have a guy work like or get a percentage of it or a salary and open it on Shabbos?
Well, the percentage, and it's, you're technically still owing it. You have to owe it to him, so that's usher. If you redid the deal as you both together did the business, then yeah.
Except what would happen?
But also, if you make a deal beforehand,
the Jew wouldn't make any money. It wouldn't help him.
Oh,
right?
Right.
Right. And therefore, that's their answer. Their answer is sorry. Right? There is no heter, because what are you going to do? You can't hire him to work for you on Shabbos. That's just us, or you're making the money on Shabbos.
Right.
Right? You could set up a deal where he makes all the money on Shabbos.
He doesn't help you.
I mean, he could, but he doesn't have to, remember? You have to make a deal.
Yes, so
can you make up a deal? Can you make the deal that he has?
For him to get, he would have to hope that he gives it as a gift of what he earned.
Right? Now, he said, look, he said, if what you want is to get all the profit, that's never going to happen. Right? If you want him to make money on Shabbos, right? Fine, but it's still not going to help you. You want the profit from Shabbos specifically.
A condition that he has to give you some as a gift?
No, no, you can't. So therefore they say, we're sorry, but we think you should be mechazek, you know, tell the guy the importance of Shabbos, try to be mekarev him, but sorry, not much we can do to help you. Okay.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning it's usher. But at the end they say, but
I'll sharing the profits?
No, to have it open on Shabbos and then have the guy like give the money to the Jew. That doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, unless the Jew's fine getting $1,000 a week.
But then that wasn't the point, right? The point was he wanted to make the money from Shabbos. Right. Right? That was the point. Okay, good. Summary, executive summary at the end, okay? Look, right? If you forgot where we were, then let's, even though I feel ridiculous reading through it, you know what? Maybe it's worth it. Assigning a task to a non-Jew when it will probably be executed on Shabbat. We see from the Gemara in Shabbat 17 and 19, the Beit Hillel permit assigning a job to a non-Jew before Shabbat, even if it's reasonable to expect the non-Jew will do it on Shabbat on the condition that payment is set in advance. So what is considered setting his fee? The Rajba explains this condition as defining a specific amount for the task the non-Jew will be acting for his or her own benefit, and consider it his own work. If so, it is permitted to hire a worker before Shabbat for a set fee rather than an hourly or daily wage. The Magen Avraham writes that a job for which there is a standard fee automatically fulfills this condition. Good? Giving a job to a non-Jew that he will necessarily perform on Shabbat. The Seir HaTshuva writes that it is still permitted such a situation as long as the Jew does not explicitly ask the non-Jew to work on Shabbat. The Agot Maimoni writes that one may not give a non-Jew money to invest during the market day if the market day is only on Shabbos, since this is the equivalent to explicitly asking him to work on Shabbat. The Taz and the Panim Pi'ira learn from this that it's forbidden to give a non-Jew a job if he will necessarily have to perform it on Shabbat. Mishnah Berurah, Shmuel Shabbat Gil Chadon, Bar Maravazako concur with this opinion, but the Beit Yosef writes that the Taz and the Panim Pi'ira mean, that's wrong, but the Beit Yosef doesn't write that the Taz and Panim mean. That's wrong. Whatever, that's forbidden to explicitly ask the non-Jew to work on Shabbat, but is otherwise permitted even if necessarily have to work on Shabbat. It meant the Hagot Maimoni, right? Not the Taz and Panim. They disagree with the Taz's interpretation of the Hagot Maimoni. The Minchas Yisrael, the Acharonim, including Rav Yosef, rule like the Beit Yosef. Is it permitted to benefit on Shabbat from what the non-Jew worked on when his fee was fixed? Right, remember? Your next door neighbor, dry cleaner, brings your dry cleaning home on Shabbos.
Yes, you're
allowed to. Shibolei Aleket and Ron disagree. The Shulchan Aruch rules leniently, while the Ramah is more stringent. The Shmir Shabbos also is generally stringent, but he permits this in the following cases. One, if the non-Jew only performs Malacha D'Rabbanan. Two, if one could theoretically have gained this benefit without the non-Jew's Malacha. Three, if there was no other alternative, in which case one may rely on the lenient opinion. Good. A business co-owned by a Jew and non-Jew. Do I have to reread this again?
No.
You're good. We just did it, right?
Okay.
Good. Shkoyach. Now, next again. You're like, no! Give us a plan!
On to the next packet.
Never. No, let's just set up the next one, okay? Yeah, let's move to 7 at least, set it up, okay? Now, if you remember, the next sugya is, this was the sugya on Chav Beis, right? But the original sugya, right, remember, our sugya got into it backwards, which was starting with the Mara Zion sugya, and then getting into the the regular one, right? It was so.
So now we're saying in all these cases, there's still another problem of.
Correct. So what, right. So what we want to do now is right in our again in our sugya it was backwards. Our sugya dealt with first the cases that are only us mishum maris ayin, and then the cases which are usher because of the nature of the partnership itself. Mm-hmm. But now if we go back to our mishnah and the sugya in chavalim and beis, the merchatz, right? Remember what did the gemara say that it's usher mifnei she nikreit al shemo. Right. It's called the Jews, and therefore it looks like the Jew is just hiring the non-Jew to be his franchise owner, right? His manager. Good. And this is a potential issue of Maris Ayin. Okay? Okay, what would you... Do you want me to lay out the sugya here, or do you want me maybe to give you an outside introduction to Maris Ayin?
So an outside introduction.
Okay, fine. So, fine. So Maris Ayin, right, fundamentally seems to be a Doraisa of sorts, or at least has a Doraisa basis. Chazal derive it from a pasuk of the Tem... Nikiim, Me Hashem, Umi Yisrael, right? Which means that you should be clean from God and Israel, right? There's a pasuk Moshe Rabbeinu says too, the Shvatim who want a portion of the world on the other side of the Yarden, right? So the way the Gemara understands this is that you have to be clean not only to God, right? Meaning, which is do the right thing, right? But also Me Yisrael, which means. That they, even if you're doing the right thing, but it looks wrong, it's usher because you're not naki mi Yisrael. Right? You're not naki mi Yisrael. Right? You understand? Right? So the problem is that not only are you obligated to make sure that you don't do the wrong thing, you're obligated to make sure that.
Why don't we learn out bin Adam the Makkum and bin Adam the Tavir?
What do you mean? You can learn a lot of things. This is how Chazal derive it, right? Expanded in Bava Basra, in the Yerushalmi and Shkolim. Okay. Now, why do you think that there's such a value to this?
Of the RSI, because if people see you doing it, they might think that it's mutter to do it.
Good. So one position that is raised. Good. So... There are basically three positions that are raised in the poskim, right? One is what Nachum said, which is say it again.
If they see you doing it, they'll think it's mutter to do it themselves.
Good, right? One is right. If they see a good from Jew doing something, they will right do the usher thing, right? Meaning. Yes?
Right. Or if they see you doing it, they might look down upon you.
Right. Meaning there's a potential problem that Yeah. Here, I'm just going to pull up my summary. Because I did it nice. Like you know, once you have to write, you can do it summarized. So let me see how I summarize it rather than doing the whole thing here. Okay. Okay, now there is another pasuk in Mishle that is a basis for it, but we'll just stick with this for now. Okay? Now the case in the Gemara, one second before we do it. So the Mishnah writes the case one, and this is that the treasurer who went into the Beit HaMikdash was obligated to go in without pockets and without cuffs because we didn't want anyone to think that he stole. Right? Not only could he not steal, we didn't want anyone to think that he stole. Right, and if he went in with cuffs, right, right, and then the Gemara goes on to describe how cynical people can be, and he says, "Look, if the guy, you know, next week turns out to be fabulously wealthy, then what's everyone going to say?
Probably stole something.
Right, stole something. What happens if he becomes poor the next week?
Then he didn't steal.
No, they'll say he probably stole something, and God is punishing him. That right, if he goes in any way that they might think he's stole, right, people are just cynical. Right, that's the Gemara's problem. Right,
that's horrible.
What?
That's horrible.
Right, right.
So we won't think that." Isn't there a mitzvah damas? I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Chavacharero.
No, damas chasfus.
There is, and the connection between these two is important. You are right, but they might be obligated to judge you favorably, but you're obligated to not put yourself in such a situation. By the pasuk of Mishlei is umatzachin v'seichel tov v'enei Elohim v'adam. Right.
Right, so you're rich, so
now,
you stole something.
Now,
you're
poor,
so you stole something, but you were caught, and this got punished.
Good. Now, I will admit, right now, okay, so maybe this is a good time to say, I'm just looking at my summary from what I wrote this year on the VBM. Mm-hmm. But the, right, the Chasam Sofer, this is my translation, right, note that this is really a hard mitzvah to keep, right? Right, I will read you the English translation of it, okay? Know that my whole life I have been troubled by the verse. I feel not bad reading the translation because it's mine, so, you know, so, fine. And you shall be clean before God and Israel. And these two obligations we have, to be clean before God and clean before Israel and his nation, these are two paired riders on our backs. However, it is much easier to fulfill the first obligation, meaning in the eyes of God, than it is the second, to fulfill one's obligation to people. For they think strange thoughts, and the weavers speak of it by moonlight, meaning the yentas are out talking, right? Its punishment is quite severe, to no end, more than one who does not fulfill his obligation to heaven, God forbid. This emerges from the Talmud at the end of the chapter Yom HaKippurim, the 8th chapter of Yom, regarding desecrating God's name. Right? He said that the problem here is it's a function of Chil Hashem.
That makes sense.
Right? Which is no atonement. Right? The Yerushalm, right? The Bible, the Gemara says no.
Yeah, but why would it be... Oh, because they think, oh, this filthy...
Correct, right? Doing... And this is number two, right? The first problem, remember, they might do something else, but the other is, they'll think, right? They think you did something else, right? Which is problematic because, as the Chasam Sofer says, it's a Chil Hashem, right? And that is the worst of sins. He says, in our great iniquity, people commonly talk about how the studious person did such and such. Right? He said, the Gemara says it's particularly bad if Talmidei Chacham do this, because then people badmouth Torah. Right? He says, and people always talk, love to gossip about Talmidei Chachamim. Right? They love to gossip about the rabbi. Right? He says, how studious this person did such and such. And in this case, even if the studious person acted properly in the eyes of God as much as possible, but not carefully enough, such that some drunkards made a mistake about him and wrote mocking songs about him, he has been caught in their trap.
This is already going too far.
Over this, all the sufferers shall grieve, and the verse screams out, "You have let them ride over us." And I have wondered many times if it is even possible that a person in the history of the world has fully fulfilled this verse. Perhaps this idea is included in what King Shlomo said, there is no righteous person in the world who does only good and no wrong.
Yes,
which means to say that even if his deeds were all good in the eyes of God, it is impossible to not sin in the second way, fulfilling the obligation in the eyes of people. This is Chasam Sofer in Chuvos and Chelik Vav Likutim number Nuntes.
So you're saying this like, you're saying this like something of... Oh,
now, of course, I was writing this in the context of social media, and I noted that if this was true in the time of Chasam Sofer... Kal v'chomer, ben bino shel kal v'chomer, when there's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter,
Snapchat,
take your pick.
Even if I put on tefillin at shachar, someone's going to say, oh, you're davening shachar slate. Bad Jew, he slept in. Like,
uh-huh.
Yeah, they think that of me on the fast days usually.
I heard, yes.
That's bad.
Because I'm the one who...
Even when you're doing a good deed, so
okay, good.
I think you're doing something bad. What do you mean, okay?
Understand.
What can you do?
Okay. So the problems are either that they'll end up doing it, or they think you did something
bad.
Usher. Okay. Now, by the way, so the in the Gemara, right? Sorry, in the Poskim, sometimes you have two different lashonos. One is Maris Ayin, and one is Chshad. Rav Moshe Feinstein divides them, and he says this is Maris Ayin. This is what we call Chshad. Right. Right? These are two different Isurim. Maris Ayin is where they might cause someone to do something usur. It's a form of Lifnei Iver. Yeah, exactly.
We had this in the Lifnei Iver. So
correct. Right? That this is a form of Lifnei Iver.
As
opposed to Chshad, which is they will think...
Because he might think that it's...
Motivated. Right, and Maris Ayin is usur because... Right? They will think you're doing something which is usur, but they'll say, oh, Donnie would never do something usur.
Then there's
right?
The whole thing that's like, so Treyavr
Dinara. Correct. So Lamai Nafkamina. So...
if you do it in private?
Correct, yes. So one of the possible nafkaminas is that generally... So, guys, listen. So the halacha is that you're not allowed... Anything that's asur b'shem harzayin, you can't even do in private. Right? Kol davar shu asur b'shem harzayin, asur b'shem chadarim. Yeah, we'll get to that. Right? So why? So there are three possibilities in poskim. Right? One is,
of what?
You know, why it's asur in private. Right?
Yeah.
One is, they still might see you, right?
I mean, you think you're in private, and you're not,
right?
Right?
Right? Two is, right? We're worried that if you do it in private, you'll get used to it.
And you're not going to be as careful, you might end up using
it. Uh-huh. I mean, you'll get used to doing it, and you'll end up doing it in public, right?
And the third is just low plug.
Yeah, that's already a gazera. It's a gazera.
And the third is low plug, right?
Isn't the second one already a gazera?
Not necessarily. And the third is just low plug, meaning once something's usher, Mishra Marasai, and it's usher.
Right?
But Ramoshe argues, based on his distinction between Marasai and Chshad, one second, that in private, Marasai is usher, but Chshad is mutter.
What?
Right? Meaning, things that look like they are usher, right? And people might do them, right? Meaning, so basically he argues, Marzain is anything.
Like it's usher, it's not necessarily usher.
So he said there's a difference, right? So like he said as follows, right? Let's say, right, Marzain would be like, I'm eating a...
soy cheeseburger.
Yeah, I'm eating a soy cheeseburger before people know what that is. That is probably
Marzain.
Right? Because,
right?
The action you're doing looks at, like, it's usher.
Right.
As opposed to chshad, like, I walk into McDonald's to use the bathroom, right? That's chshad. They don't see me doing anything usher. They just are going to think I'm going to do something usher, right? No one's going to, right? So he said that, right? If no one's around, I could go in and use the bathroom because it's not a Marasai problem, it's a chshad problem, right? Now, one second. This is one possibility. The stechemet is a different possibility, which is that the difference between Marasai and chshad is... Is when they look at what I'm doing, are they going to look at it and say he's obviously doing something usher? That's Marasayan.
Right.
Chshad is where they look at what I'm doing and saying he might be doing something usher. Right.
So it's all based on how the person perceives you.
Correct.
Even if you combine the two, if somebody looks like you're doing something.
No. The question is, when they look at what I'm doing, are they going to look away and say he did something usher, or are they going to look and say he might have done something usher?
Right. So I'm saying,
Wait. Think. Is that clear?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, the thing is,
you keep saying it. Again, the Sechemet says the difference between Marasai and Chshad is Marasai is where they will look at it and say he definitely did something usher.
Mm-hmm.
Chshad is where they look at it and say, you know, that looks sketchy.
So that's what
even when they look at it, they're not sure. Right? I mean, the person looking at it will say, now,
how could he say matzo?
By the way, now,
how
do you understand?
Matzo, then?
Do you understand why one of these would be usher even in private and one not?
Right.
Right? He's saying something which really looks usher, you could argue, is rabbinically an expansion of the usher.
Okay.
But something which, even if they saw me doing it, they would at best be misupik about whether I did anything wrong.
What if you do the same act and somebody looks at it?
Why would they have misupik?
Because what I did is questionable and not bad, sir.
Yeah, but
right?
If you do that more often, let me say I have a good example. You're a courier for a company and you bring food from McDonald's.
Okay, stop giving me examples. Is the principle clear?
Is
what he said clear?
Yeah, I understand.
Meaning,
that.
If you do something and they look at it and say, you know, that looks sketchy.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
No.
So that's only chshad.
What if one person says, "Okay, he's doing something else," but once.
So let me give you a bad example, right? Like, chshad might be, I don't know, you leave work 10 minutes before Shabbos,
okay.
Right? Okay. So, and the people don't realize, right? They look and they say, you know, that looks weird, but
he lives 5 minutes away.
No? Right? Maybe. Right. Right. Your office is in 42nd Street, right? And maybe he you know. Maybe he's going to daven at Lincoln Square and he's already in a suit. He's a lawyer, right?
Right.
He left his computer here, just walked out, right?
He's driving to Shoal or something.
Right. He's walking, right? No, he's just going to walk to Shoal from here, right? It's a 15-minute walk, right?
Right.
You know, big deal, right? You know, his wife is lighting at home, right? They would look at it and say, I didn't see him violate Shabbos.
But he...
So I'm not sure he's doing anything wrong. I'm left with a question in my mind.
Right.
Right? Right, that's chshad, not Marasayan.
Okay, no.
So according to that, you could argue that, look, it's a problem to eat a cheeseburger, right, soy cheeseburger that someone will think is a cheeseburger, even in private, because maybe they'll peek in, right?
Morning star.
Right? But here, right, let's say I don't work on 59th Street, right? I work in the middle of Idaho, right? And there's no Jews around, and no one knows I'm Jewish, b'chlal, and like, right? You know,
there it should, it,
and I, you know, and my office is 5 minutes from the nearest Chabad, right? So, like, I leave 10 minutes before Shabbos.
But nobody will see you ever.
Right? What I'm doing doesn't look usher; it just raises questions. Yeah. But no one's here to see it, anyways. So then,
how could you stand? No,
what if? So it's then, it would be usher.
Yeah, but what if?
But something is usher. Mamish remarks I need usher even in private.
Yeah, but what if it's the same act, but one person would?
Oh, I understand. It's a Gemara. There's not up for discussion.
No.
Yes.
I'm still troubled by.
Okay. Too bad. Too bad. It's usher.
Rebbe, what if?
Right?
What if it's the same act?
Again, that's why the Chacham Sofer said this is the hardest thing in the world to fulfill. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What if it's the same act, but one person looks at it as you're doing something about it, usher, and one person has a questionable that. Like, would you say it's Mar Sinai, or you
no,
would go
with the type of thing? It has to be the type of thing.
Oh, so it's not. There's
it's not about the viewer. You can only be worried about, right? Are you doing the type of thing that you think someone will look at it and say Vade or something?
About the viewer.
Okay. Oh. So these are. Okay. Okay, fine. Whatever. These are a little bit of the background things. Okay, if we need a little bit more background, we'll do it. But these are some of the principles you got to keep in mind as you go through the sugya. Okay. Nachum, have a good Shabbat.